Cars today are safer, more reliable, and packing more technology than ever before.
But if you're looking for an appliance on wheels, this isn't your show.
We want to help everyone find a car they'll really love, capable on the commute, and a laugh on your favorite road.
If you take the long way home, this is for you. New cars, used cars, whatever your budget, whatever your needs, if you like to drive, we want to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Well, it's a 2014 Patson Hall Chardonnay that I'm drinking. Welcome to the Food and Wine Pairings Podcast, everybody. We're your hosts.
Stop.
Oh, wait. Wait, stop. Cars. It's cars that we should be talking about,
seriously.
Right?
I'm having a wonderful year for Cherry Coke. Yeah, it was a fantastic crop of Cherry Coke that year.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like drinking a sunset. It's delicious.
Yeah, stop it. Stop it. You want to hear the plastic thud of one of my glasses against the furniture? Hey, yeah, so it's Paul and Todd. We're supposed to talk about cars, aren't we?
Cars,
and we're not doing
that's
a good
it.
Job of that.
Gosh, I always forget. No. Welcome, everybody. We're thrilled to have you with us. Thank you for writing these Facebook questions. They're already making both of us laugh here as we're reading through this. So
There's
we'll get
some
to that.
Great ones tonight. Yes, I agree.
We'll get to those at the
I
end
totally
of the podcast.
Agree.
We have excellent debates here for you. Actually, mm-hmm. one of them actually is a debate. Looking forward to that. We have Ben writing. His car is coming to the end of a lease, and we are truly going to debate, should he keep it or sell it? Keep or sell a 2014 Cadillac CTS V-Wagon, the unicorn, the mystical unicorn that we always talk about.
I know.
He has one. Should he keep it or sell it? And
I totally agree. Very odd.
Then we've got Atziel. He has, what does he have? Oh, he's got a car that's been in an accident. Everyone's okay. I guess the car was sort of hit and run, sitting by the side of the road, and it's totaled, and now he needs something that is family friendly, and we're going to help him avoid a minivan. How to not drive a minivan when you have kids. I mean, you're a perfect example, Todd. I mean, this is how to avoid a minivan.
I'm trying. Yes, yes. Make great efforts. I will say, if you're one of the people that writes to us and says, "Hi, so I have six kids, I can't help you. I can't help you."
May I steer you to these lovely Econoline vans over here?
Congratulations on your six kids. Actually, you know, even at four kids, though, it gets hard. You know, our friend Greg has got four boys,
right?
And those are big. I mean, his two oldest boys are now as big as he is. Thank God they're going to be driving soon, which will help. But the reality of it is, once you have four kids, you have severely limited your realities. But if you're under that, then yes, there are options and you can stay out of a minivan. So we'll see where it goes.
Although at some point, the older kids start babysitting the younger kids and it kind of takes the pressure off the parents, right? I mean, that's kind of the design of having four plus kids. Isn't that the idea?
Theoretically, well, this was the old farming idea. The reason you had a bunch of kids in the old days of farming was you had more hands to work in the field, and then you had, of course, my father, who was raised by a farmer, and he was an only child. So boy, did he work! But yeah, exactly.
Nice. All right. Well, great stuff, and some podcast, Facebook stuff at the end.
Some really good ones there.
Scrolling through these, they're hilarious. But in the meantime, we wanted to start off with a few talking points to begin with, and that is our friend Dan Roth from Autoblog. We were on his podcast, a few weeks ago, I think?
Mm-hmm.
And,
same week as our 100th podcast. It was that same week, yeah.
That's right. So now it's time to return the favor and invite him on to our podcast. And Dan, if you're listening, we are going to have you debate some emails that have been written into us.
But that's the trick. I mean, no pressure, Dan, but you know, you put us on the spot without giving us warning. We are giving you warning, and the warning is get ready, because we are going to have, if you're on this show as a guest, that's the trick. You've got to do the car debates with us.
That's right.
And a while ago, Michael Harley did it with us. He actually did a fantastic job, and we're going to have Dan on. Actually, what's happening, just so you know, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, we will be recording Tuesday night. We'll post for Facebook questions. Due to travel and stuff, we're recording a little earlier than we normally do for our Friday podcast this week, but we are going to have Dan on. We're looking forward to that, and we'll hit your questions and car debates, and he's going to get the full treatment, so hopefully that'll be fun.
Well, speaking of guests, we have put that out there, and we would still take recommendations. We are still taking listener recommendations for who you think we should have on, but one tweet from Michael Chen came in today who suggested Jason Fenske from Engineering Explained, and he actually liked that tweet just today. And so, Jason, we are inviting you onto the podcast. If you're listening, we would love to have you on. We would love to. I mean, Jason's got 750,000 subscribers, some brilliant videos. He's got a lot of information on his site. But I will say we would love to have you on, Jason, and listeners, and relate his experience, not only debate a car, but also in terms of buying, in terms of buying and selling cars, you know, keep in mind about what we're debating here, ask about his engineering prowess and, you know, kind of his thoughts on that. Because he's explained everything from turbos to differentials to all kinds of stuff, the way it works. But now let's go further and relate it to some kind of buying or relate it to the feel of a car, maybe. A steering rack. Hydraulic versus electric, or something like that.
That'd be cool. It'd be fun to also just see what kind of questions you guys might have for him. I will say I'm not going to assume he's listening to this podcast. We are going to have to reach out to him and close that loop.
We will.
But yeah, it would be very cool to have him on. And as Paul's saying, let us know who you think would be interesting because we're excited at the prospect.
Yeah. Yeah, this should be fun. Great suggestion. Love that, Michael. Thank you. And also keep the suggestions coming for more folks that you'd like to have on our podcast. And maybe we can do the switcheroo like we're doing with Dan Roth from Autoblog. Maybe we can kind of trade off. We can be on theirs. They could be on ours. And, of course, you have to debate a car for a guest when you're on our podcast. So keep the suggestions coming.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah, we should actually do a couple of those, shouldn't we?
We should, actually. Before we do, I would actually like to again thump the drum for our pilgrimage adventure coming up and the Chicago Track Day. We actually had a Facebook question on here that, what was it? Something about track cars. I'll keep looking. But if you have not heard or seen, go to the everydaydriver.com page, adventures tab there, and you're going to see both Pilgrimage Adventure and the Chicago Track Day. We are inviting you, our listeners, our viewers, to Germany, to Europe with us to recreate, to do the Pilgrimage Adventure film that we did, only do it better, and join us on this trip. So go there for more information. And then Chicago Track Day is August 22nd, 2016. And we're inviting you out to Autobahn Raceway, Autobahn Country Club, just outside of Chicago to come join us for a track day. We'd love to have you.
Yep. It's going to be really cool. There's a lot of information about both of those on there. And, you know, if you don't have the answer to your question, some of you are writing to us. We appreciate it. There is now an FAQ related to the pilgrimage trip that's answered a lot of the common questions you guys have had there. And a lot of the questions that relate to the Chicago Track Day can be answered through Laps Incorporated. Once you start on our site, the reason to start on our site there is because for Pilgrimage, you can't get your info any other place. For Chicago Track Day, you can't get the code for your discount for the Chicago Track Day any place but our website. And from there, you can lead your way to Laps Incorporated, which will answer a lot of your questions and let you sign up yourself and your car, because whatever you drive, you can bring it, put it on the track. Maybe we'll provide some comedy as a result. And there we go.
That's really what we're here to do, is just provide comedy to you. That's our entire purpose in life.
And apparently you're trying to pair food and wine, which is bound to end well, especially with me trying to co-host that with you. That's going to be quite disastrous.
That's delicious. Listen to that. It's delicious.
Seriously, stop it. You bought a wind chime. Good for you. You bought a wind chime.
It's a wind chime full of wine. That's what it is.
So we've got our first, we've got our first of two car debates, and that is Ben writing to us. And he has a fantastic question. Paul brought it up already and teased it, because he has a 2014 CTS-V wagon. He does not say if it's manual, but frankly, as rare as those cars are, who cares? You have a CTS-V wagon that you have thoroughly enjoyed. Your three-year lease is coming to an end in about 6 months, so you're already kind of looking at what does this mean, what's next, and you're realizing that if you buy that car out, which you're seriously considering doing, it's going to cost you about 41 grand. So you're going, okay, all right, so if I'm going to be spending 40 grand or so on a car, do I keep this or do I get something else? And that's pretty fascinating, because he has kids and he's doing, you know, the insurance isn't that bad. You know, we're talking Costco runs and low maintenance and kids, and he's saying 40K, all right, impress me. And that is a hard one, especially considering what that car you already has is.
Yeah, this is truly the debate, because we have shown a lot of love to that car, as a matter of fact, driven one by one of our longtime supporters and fans, Raul. He has got one, that black one that you've seen, and what a car, what a rare beast. And so Ben has suggested Focus RS, a 911, some other things on here. It sounds like you're really waffling. And after reading your story, Ben, I'm waffling too. I am nearly split 50-50 down the middle. I've got suggestions either way, and I'm curious. Curious to hear what you think, Ben, because Ben tells us that the buyout price for this car is $41,000, which is okay. And to your point, Ben, here, in that neighborhood of the price range, there's not much of any other car that you like better than the Cadillac, except you've named one here, but I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
So I went looking. I went shopping. I pretended that I'm in the market for a 2014 CTS-V wagon. Well, for the run of cars that they did, they are worth anywhere from, 62 on the high end. And the lowest that I found was $45,000. So that was the cheapest one that I found, about 60,000 miles on it. So therefore, that tells me...
So at that point, he's getting a bargain if he buys in and stays in. That's an interesting way to look at it. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. That's a great point.
So I'm thinking, keep the wagon. There's none that are on the market for 41 grand. Imagine if you want to try to buy that car, you're going to pay 45 on up. And if you've leased that
car,
Ben, I bet you've got lower than 60,000 miles on that car. So it's worth... Yeah. Got to be more than that, right?
Hadn't even thought of it from that perspective. That starts to really swing it in just the standpoint of if you like it, keep it, you have yourself a bargain. I do see that. I have other things I want to recommend, but that is a great point.
Well, I'm just getting started because that's the half of me that says keep the wagon because you love it already.
Okay.
Then the other half says, okay, the lease comes to an end. Buy it for $41,000. Then promptly sell it for $55,000, which is the general mean price that they're going for.
Uh-huh. And walk with that money. Yeah, that's a great point as well.
Keep that $14,000 that you just made and go buy or lease something else that interests you, like a Focus RS or something else.
Well, but I would even say he could still undercut the market. Buy it for 41, sell it for 50.
Sure.
Which means it'll move.
Sure.
And you've still made almost 10 grand. I take your point. I mean, you could, if you went that route, you could look at the market, as Paul's saying, and you could just make it the cheapest one online by $1,000. And you're still going to make 10 grand.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got 10
grand. Interesting. Okay. All right. You're being quite strategic this evening. I'm very impressed.
Well, thank you. I feel like, that 10 to 14 grand, or even sell it for more. Who knows? You'll just have to find out what it's worth. Kelley Blue Book. Pocket that money, pay off debt, put it towards a next car, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got these choices on here that Ben suggested, the Focus RS, a second gen 997, so the 997.2 911. Love the idea, but I don't think it's the right car for you. Just objectively,
I don't either.
Looking from a space and usability standpoint, I'm Porsche guy over here, and I don't think that's the right car for you. So then I think... Yeah. Huh, well, how could you get into a Porsche?
If he's used that CTS-V wagon the way he's talking about, then I'm sorry, but the Focus sports car isn't for you. And I think the Focus RS, as interesting as it is, will be such a step down in feel from where you've been as far as scale and interior style that I just don't know that that's a match either. It's interesting, but I think the big unknown here, the big mystery for me with Ben is how much does he want something different? If he's stepping out of the wagon, this is the mystery part for me. If he's stepping out of the wagon, is he wanting to go, okay, that was fun, I liked it, let's get something different? Or is it, what's an equivalent wagon to this? Because if you're staying there, that's where it's really hard.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I mean, I'm in agreement. And I think, all right, I kept going. I thought, well, how could we get you into a Porsche, Ben?
I know where you're going.
Well, I thought, if you're into leasing... 2016 Cayenne or Cayenne S e-hybrid, respectively $699 and $749 a month. But there's still a lot of problems with both of those cars because they only check a few boxes. Yes, there's room for kids and they're fun to drive, but they're not really cheap to insure or maintain, even used Cayennes. So therefore, I don't even know that Porsches will fit the bill for you.
And in a shocking reversal of fortune on the Everyday Driver car debate, for those of you wanting to drink along with the mentions of Porsche in the positive, I am going to come to Porsche's defense here.
Oh, really?
I know that's shocking, but honestly,
I'm shocked.
One of the things that you have to consider, Ben, is this. Here's the first thing. I think that Paul's strategic idea is probably masterful, and that is buy out that car, and then with the car in your hands at 41 grand, decide what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Maybe you keep it, but if you don't keep it, then promptly turn around and sell it, make yourself a profit, and walk with maybe 50. I still didn't even shop for you at 50. I shopped for you at 45. And the thing is, at 45, you can get yourself some choices of the Panamera S. You need to go drive a Panamera. Mm.
Can you get a Panamera for that price?
Yes, you can, my friend.
Really?
Certainly, if you've got 50 in your pocket, you have choices. If we're really talking about him turning around and selling that car, but I looked it up. At this point, for 40 to 50, pardon me, for four, yeah, between 40 and 50 grand, you have options in the Panamera world.
Sure.
And you're not going to get the big turbo, has every bell and whistle, but you could find occasionally some Panamera S. Now, a lot of the ones I'm finding at that point are roughly 70 to 80,000 miles. The reason they're selling them there and the reason they're cheap is because Porsche service intervals are 40, 80, and 120. Those are the big boys. Of course, mm-hmm. you do it about it once a year, yeah. about every 10,000. But those are the big boys, the 40, 80, and 120. We just did the 80 on our Cayenne, okay? Is this inexpensive? No. But here's the thing. My dad, as comparative, has got a Chevy Avalanche. It's just a big Chevy SUV with different body panels on it, essentially. Mm-hmm. He did 100,000 miles service, and it cost him, I think, $1,200, and there was another $600 he didn't do on his 100,000-mile Avalanche. I did the 80,000-mile service on my Panamera, including new brakes and rotors on all four corners, and all in, it was $1,400. Now, while $1,400 is not cheap for 80,000 miles, I mean, not cheap for a big service, I will acknowledge, when you consider it was less than my dad paid to get less done on his Avalanche, that shocks me. And then, because you just think Chevy's going to be less expensive.
Right.
Not true. And the other thing is that the 80,000 mile service on that Cayenne, and we'll do a little video and mention this further, but the 80,000 mile service on that Cayenne from the dealer, just the service was going to be $1,400. I got the service cost cut in half by going to my independent guy. And so that service and the all four corner brakes, $1,400, which again, I'm not saying that that's cheap, but comparative to other cars, when you start to do real genuine service on other cars at big service intervals, it's really not going to be that far off. Now, I will acknowledge if you're a DIY and you actually have the ability to put it up on a lift and do this stuff yourself, you can save yourself staggeringly. I'm just talking straight across the board, pay for somebody to do it. Because I think that's what frightens people about Porsches. I don't want to do it myself. I'm worried it's a Porsche. What if I do it wrong? Which is a fair comment. In my case, I wanted to do the brakes, couldn't, because the bolts on the back of the calipers take an angle I didn't have, because I don't have a four-post lift, and over 200 pound-feet of torque to crack them. Oof. I don't have a breaker bar. So those two realities. I was all ready to do the brakes. Had all the parts, was going to do it. I can do brakes. That's not a problem. Got to that and went, I literally cannot do this without hurting myself.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was like, all right, well, I'm going to take it my service guy anyway. Let's let him do the brakes. My point is, Porsche Panamera, please go drive one. Because the dynamics are going to trump your CTS-V. I fully believe that they will.
Mm-hmm.
It won't have the just, I'm shocking myself, power of your CTS-V, but they're not exactly slow. Certainly if you get the S. If you get the base, not that impressive. But if you get the S and you're going to beat it in interior dynamics, the seats are going to be better. It's not going to be quite as much room, but it's not going to be too far off. I think you need at least drive one. Here's me defending Porsche. I know, but there it is.
Wow. I'm impressed. That was excellent, actually. Two things. You took your Cayenne to an independent. Did your dad take the Avalanche to the dealer to get all that stuff done, and therefore that's kind of the price difference? And second of all, your dad has over 100,000 miles on the Avalanche. Where has he been driving?
He has excellent question.
Where's he been
Superb
going?
Superb question. Yes.
Well, 100,000
my
miles?
Parents live.
What?
Yeah, exactly. My parents live close to Yosemite Valley. They retired up to Central California. And so he drives into the valley regularly. Of course, they live about 100 miles from Fresno. So if they want to go to a real town, they have to drive to Fresno. So there's miles getting racked up. That's part of it.
Okay.
And then they've taken some road trips because they love the way that thing rides, because it rides like a big Suburban. It's just, it ignores the world and off you go on a cruise. So you know, they put some real miles on it. I honestly don't think it was dealer service, but they have one, because again, they're in a small town, but they have one of those we work on every car kind of things. And, you know, the guy did the service he was supposed to do and then came up with a big list of other things he should do. And my dad did like half that list. And I think the total was like 1,200. So, yeah.
Hmm. Wow. I didn't realize that.
I agree. I was quite shocked. I wish I could see the list of everything he had done because I would love to compare. But that's the thing that most people don't think about, because I know I haven't thought about it a lot. Your big service intervals on most cars are between 80 and 100,000 miles, maybe like 110.
Yeah.
A lot of cars with you know, Japanese cars with timing belts like the Subarus are like 105,000 miles. That big service, if you do everything on the list, it's never cheap. It's never just, oh, a couple hundred bucks. No, it'll probably have a comma in that number.
Yeah.
If you do everything that's supposed to be on that list on that big service interval, close to 100 grand, that's the problem. And of course, so that means these Porsches that I'm talking about, almost every single one of them, the reason that they're as cheap as they are is because it's just before that 80,000 mile service, which means your budget has to be buy one and then get that service done. You have to know that right away. But that's true of a lot of cars. I mean, that's why you see so many cars sold for at less than 80,000 miles. Typically, they're sold just before 60 or just before 80 or just before 100 because those are not only big milestones, but service intervals.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell. That's funny. Well, gosh, unbeknownst to me, Porsches still could be the answer. I didn't see that coming, but I'm fully supportive of it.
I will be surprised, honestly, if he finds something, as he suggested here, that makes more sense than the CTS-V wagon. But I really genuinely think that the Panamera is worth cross-shopping and cross-driving because you have money that could get you into one. And since you've and I wouldn't have gone there. I wouldn't have gone there except for the fact that he brought up the 997.
Yeah.
And I just thought, okay, if you're going to go there, which feels like a departure from where you need to be, then go drive the Panamera.
Definitely.
You know, that's the thing. And, you know, I also brought up Usual Suspects, of course. You could look at the E90 Series M3. You could look at you could get yourself a new Chevy SS. Hello. But
true.
Those aren't wagons. I don't know if you want a wagon. I don't know if you need a wagon. Now, both of those other sedans have got big trunks. You certainly could get by with either of those. The SS would be new, which I couldn't recommend more.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you get a brand new one. Walk away happy. But and if you got 50 grand for your CTS-V, you walked away with money in your pocket with a brand new Chevy SS. But I don't know, based on his descriptions, I'm kind of wondering if wagon is a little paramount if he stays that. I mean, even the Focus RS, he's kind of clinging to wagon there. The 997 is such a left turn. That's why I wind up Panamera.
Yeah. Well, speaking of wagon, my last thought here is the one he suggested. I mean, with that price differential I found you, with the money that I found you, Ben, you could go scratch that Mercedes E63 itch. You could go do that if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
All the rules that we're talking about still apply. The maintenance, you know, buy smart, all those kinds of things. But it sounds like you wanted to kind of stay into the wagon thing and go do the German equivalent. It's like the German Cadillac equivalent, kind of. I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Gigantic engine, horsepower wars, monster power, unique, fast, all those things.
Well, I mean, I would spin it the other way. I would say that the CTS-V wagon is Cadillac doing what Germany has always done and decided to not really sell here. That's kind of what the CTS-V wagon is.
Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
Because I feel like the German brands have always done that car, and the Americans never really have. We had plenty of big sedans with big engines in it, but very few big wagons. Well, there's been a few, but certainly forever it's been like a ghost town in wagon world ever since the vacation movies. Those are the cars you do not make or sell. So, you know.
Well, wagons sell like crazy in Europe. Everybody's got
a
wagon. The little 2-liter diesel wagon, and they're fast, and everybody has a wagon. And then Americans are just kind of like, I guess I'll take my SUV. Just 72 million cup holders, and yeah, it's really interesting to me. But you see them everywhere when you go to Europe. They're everywhere.
Well, I was just reading a couple of different places. I was just reading that the May numbers are in. Now, granted, look, it's really hard to look at any 1 month sales numbers and say this is the new trend. I mean, obviously, trends happen over time. But what was interesting is that the May sales numbers compared to a year prior for every automaker, but I think Honda because of the Civic and Subaru because it's Subaru and they don't really aren't really known for SUVs. Every other automaker, the year over year, so May last year to May this year, for the first time they were selling more SUVs than cars across wow. every other automaker.
Wow, yeah.
That is definitely the way the world is shifting. And China's more interested in SUVs. Obviously, everybody's getting obsessed with ride height as they try to bring the gas mileage up and the size of the SUV down but leave the ride height. They just become the thing everybody's buying, which makes me a little bit sad because it makes, as weird as it sounds, cars a niche market more so, if it continues. Look, this was 1 month. I'm not saying this is the way it's all going, but I thought it was an interesting stat to read. There it is on paper. More SUVs than cars being sold.
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre, but there you go.
And if BMW has anything to say about it, I mean, X4, really? X4? What is that? Well,
but we've still got room for the X4.5.
Oh, true.
You know,
I didn't think of that.
The X6.6 and a half, you know, whatever it's going to be, you know, I mean, it'll be, I'm sure BMW can slice that pie another 100 times. I'm not sure what it is, but they will find a way.
When you zoom the slice gets bigger and then we can dice it up even more. Excellent.
I believe in BMW's power of separating brands. I fully believe it. I know they will find a niche that I have never imagined.
Come on, BMW, do it. We're all counting on you. We're rooting for you. You can do it.
We're gonna build an SUV for people with exactly 3 children.
Of a certain
age.
Doesn't
work for people with 2. Doesn't work for people with 4. It's for people with exactly 3 children.
That's hilarious.
Not sure what we're going to call it yet, but there's an unserved market, the 3-child market for the SUV. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Ben, interesting suggestions. Hopefully this has been helpful. And please let us know. His lease is coming to an end in 6 months. So we're a little bit early, but hopefully you've got some time to do some driving, some testing of the cars, start thinking about it. So keep us posted and write back with your choices. So anyway, but in the meantime, we can move on to the second car debate from Etzel Resendiz. I think I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. He does not say where he's writing in from, but had this story about an 07 Honda CR-V EX. So the nice one, the loaded one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hit and run. Yes, the CR-V was parked. So confirmed there. No one was in it. So thank goodness. Glad to hear you're okay. Sorry to hear about your car. I hope you get as much money possible from your insurance. But clearly you're shopping, and even more so, not just to replace that car, but because you're going to be parents. So you and your wife, you're going to be parents. Congratulations. I think it's fantastic. Wonderful. So now it's going to be kid-friendly, no minivans.
And you've owned a lot of things, Zale. You've got S2Ks here. You've got a 335 E92, Mustang GT, Fox Bodies, other BMWs, the RSX, which is really cool, another Civic Si. So you clearly have got some and a good number of modded Civics. So a lot of Honda love in your family, which is cool. But you haven't had a whole lot of kid-friendly cars. And of course, guess what? You're thinking differently now. You've looked at your budget. You said, okay, no minivans. Don't want it to scream soccer mom, but you have a budget of $20,000. So you have a four-door, that E46 generation, but of course it's the 335. It's not the, or you don't say. I guess that's the 330, wouldn't it be? You talk about having an E46 generation four-door. So that's the car you could dump. You've got about $20,000 to spend. Sounds like you're pondering an SUV. Okay, this is interesting. Let's keep you out of the minivan feel. But as we were just saying, SUVs are everywhere.
Certainly, BMW is going to make one for him, right? I mean, at the $20,000 price range, they're going to dice it up, and then they're not going to have anything left. So they got to look at the $20,000 price range. Surely they're going to make one for you at some point, but just not today. So we're going to have to recommend some other things for you. Today just ain't the day that they're building the car for you. So
BMW is going to start making models with actually a single person's name on it. It's not going to be built for. No, that's the model name. That's the BMW.
That's right.
Insert your name here.
And if this is not your name, we're not going to sell it to you, even used.
You remember The Simpsons, the Homer?
Totally.
Where Homer advised them on a car and it came up with this bulbous, horrific thing. That's actually the path BMW's on. We're going to make you your car. Oh, no.
Oh, anyway. This is funny. So as we were saying, about $20,000 price range. You said $20,000, but, you know, it's us, so we're going to, you know, knock on that door. We're going to push. We're
going to
tweak.
We're going to ignore what you said and spend money you don't have.
Blow right
Yay
past your budget.
Us.
I do have some choices here for you that I think are very worth a consideration, and one that is $4,000 above your price point, just a touch, just a thimble full of
All
money.
Right.
to consider?
A thimble full of money.
Just a tiny.
No.
Just a thin slice of cheesecake more than your $20,000 price range. But we will start, since you had a CRV, I thought, what about another one? You like that car. Used ones in the 2012, 2013 range, they're $22,000. You know, I think you could go get another one very easily and upgrade, new body style, all those kinds of things. You'd have a newer one of the same car since it kind of works for you already. I thought, what about just getting more of the same because you know it's going to be for your family car? So maybe.
Yeah, true.
Not a minivan.
True.
But I kept going from there. I thought, all right, well, you've done the Honda thing. You've had modded Civics SL. You've had the Type S or the RSX Type S, Civic Si. As I said, modded Civics. So I thought, stepping up to the Acura RDX, that's a turbocharged four. Excellent choice.
But
used.
Superb.
You could go after that. They call it the super handling all-wheel drive. I don't know how super the handling is because have not driven it, but...
But everything in the Acura lineup, we've talked about this before, the stuff in the Acura lineup gets overlooked more than it should be.
Yeah.
And the super handling all-wheel drive, they are not the most dynamic cars made, but any car they put that on is surprising. I think that RDX is a great choice. I mean, you know, because we could say, and I was going to say the standard Mazda CX-5 here and all that kind of stuff, but if you get an RDX, do the RDX. I fully agree.
I'm not sure as far as size. I think it should be comparable to that CRV, but again, maybe the dynamics would really push you over the edge. Hopefully they would. So go consider one of those. I thought of a two-wheel drive Jeep Renegade, but then I thought, I don't know that that car's for you. Maybe. But that kept me going. I thought there's got to be more answers here.
All right.
We've recommended the Mazda CX-5 a lot. And in the 2013, 2014 arena, somewhere in there, you can easily spend $20,000, get a very stylish, very clean, very nice Mazda CX-5. Also not a minivan, very good looking. I really like those a lot. And early on in the podcast sessions, I think the first year, we recommended that to a lot of people just because it's so useful and such a great value. I think it's great.
And everyone we know that's had a CX-5 has been very impressed with it. That's not just us talking. Everyone we know that has one. I mean, I know a guy right now that he and his wife bought a used one about a year ago, and he and I talked about it prior, and they're in love with it. So, I mean, everybody I know that's had one has really liked it. You know, the Mazda 3 platform is a really good platform, and it's built up on that. So, yes, I mean, there's a reason we keep bringing it up. It's just because it's good.
Yeah. What else? Chevy Traverse, GMC Acadia. I mean, coming back to the early years of your parenting, that's what you had, the Acadia, and it worked fine. Yeah. It was actually nearly as spacious as a minivan. Works great as a production vehicle. I mean, you can speak to that all day long. $20,000, easy.
No, I mean, they have tons of room. I mean, the truth of it is, the reason we got rid of ours is because we realized it was too large for what we needed. Now, I don't know. Maybe you're going to have a couple of kids. But if you are, you know, it starts to get more realistic. We realized we were only going to have one, and it was the three of us in this drivable gymnasium. I mean, the thing about the Traverse and the Acadia is, if you park one next to an SUV, it looks, I mean, like next to the Tahoe, for example, okay? Not even the full Suburban. You park it next to the Tahoe from the same family, and it looks significantly smaller, and yet it has more space inside than the Tahoe does, which is really incredible use of packaging. Then if you park it next to a minivan, it looks better than the minivan. Now, that's not saying much. That bar is set low, but it does look better than a minivan. So, I mean, it has much more minivan dynamics. I will acknowledge that. They're front-wheel drive. They have that kind of platform. They're not designed to be big off-roaders. But, yeah, those are worthwhile. I take your point.
All right, Etzel, forgive me if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. I got this choice for you here to consider. And like I said, just a little bit slightly more, but there's a reason. It's because it's brand new. And I've been hearing people talk about that in my neighborhood, as a matter of fact, talking to various people. They have a 2016 brand new Hyundai Tucson Eco or Sport. Now, these start at $24,150, so blowing it a little bit. But did you know? I did not know until I went on the website. Both of these models have a 7-speed dual-clutch transmission. I wasn't aware of that. And it's got a turboed 4, 1.6-liter turboed 4, 176 horsepower, That, on the other hand, has been described a little bit light switchy. So kind of when you're driving it, where's the turbo? Where's the turbo? There's the power. Holy moly.
And suddenly there was turbo. Yeah.
But that could be a good thing. That means it's zippy. It's snappy. It's got some power. And I'm looking at this on the website and I'm thinking, wow, definitely not a minivan. And it says, hey, young hip family up and coming. It's my sports car kind of. You know, put my canoe on the top and we go doing the outdoor sport that we do as a family, and it's not a minivan.
Now all you're doing is trying to be the marketing agency. That's actually what you're trying to do. How do we make people think this is a Jeep? I know what we do. We strap a canoe to the roof. Then it says Jeep.
A canoe to anything and it's suddenly your SUV. Anyway, So this Tucson is intriguing to me. I think it looks good. Hyundai has found their corporate styling voice. I think it looks really quite good, something to consider, which then led me to the Nissan Murano, but it's 10 grand above your price point. I think they're good looking. Mm. This new 2016 Nissan Murano, interesting design, very interesting. Also another company that's found their voice, I think stylistically speaking, but again, blown out the budget there. And I think you should look at the Tucson if you can. Otherwise, these other suggestions could fit the bill. And yeah, curious, what else is on your list?
Well, I have one other one, and again, I can't believe I'm here, but I feel like it's an elephant in the room moment. I have to mention it just because it exists, and I own one, and that is a Cayenne. You're talking about wanting a non-minivan. I'm at Porsche again. I don't mean to be the guy banging on about Porsche tonight. I really don't, but I did read this, and I thought, okay, you want a non-minivan, you want the lines of an SUV, but you want it to feel a little more special than that, be a little bit more dynamic. You want to feel like you're still a car guy in a family car. This is why we got a Cayenne. You've got 20 grand to spend. Now, Paul's gone as much as 24. I will say to you, for 24 all day long, you could get a Cayenne. You're going to get a base one. It's going to be the V6. It's not going to blow you away in power, but they're not slow. And, I mean, they're faster than pretty much all these other SUVs we're mentioning, even in base form. Again, I just talked about what it costs to maintain that. It can be pricey at the big intervals, but that is the car you now own. I mean, that could be interesting. I think it's worth looking at because what happens is people have that budget, and this is why we're doing long-term with that car. You have that budget, the 20 to 25 grand, and you think, I couldn't buy a Cayenne, could I? Yes, you could. Do you want one? I don't know. You got to debate that as far as cost of maintenance and just being aware of what it requires, but you absolutely can, and by and large, those cars are reliable. That's the thing about it. They're not inexpensive to maintain, but stuff doesn't randomly break. Mm-hmm. So I have to bring it up because, let's be honest, I own one. Now, I will say this to you. You will go online right now. Whoever you are that's listening, you're going to be curious about if I'm right or not about can you get a Cayenne that cheap. You're going to go online, and you're going to find some, I'm just going to call it out, let's say a 2006 Cayenne Turbo with 90,000 miles and it's 16 grand, and you're going to think, Cayenne Turbo for 16 grand. Please, please don't buy that car. The 03 to 06 were money
pits. First gen.
They were money pits. They were, and I'll tell you, they were money pits so far that Porsche didn't make the car in 07. There was no Cayenne in 2007 because there were so many issues of people pouring money into those vehicles. It didn't make an 07. Then 08 to 2010, I happen to have a 2010. That's the revision of what they first introduced, and they are far more reliable. And then starting in 2011 is the body style you're seeing now. That started in 2011. So in 08 to 2010, I'm still saying you can still get one of those for 20 to 25. You can get one. You will find a ridiculous deal on some Cayenne out there that is an 03 to 06. That's why they're that cheap. And I have seen Panamera Turbo, 14 grand, and you think, oh my gosh, and then reality sets in and you go, that's going to be just a massive hole in my wallet.
Flood damage, salvage title, 14 grand, come this way. No.
I mean, well, and that's the thing, not even salvage title, but there's a reason those things are so cheap.
Yeah.
You get high mileage, very first-gen Cayennes in the massive upper end of capability, and they are very cheap, and there is a reason, because that will break your wallet.
I will have you know, I tried hard to not suggest a Porsche. I really tried hard over here.
You've done well, and I have ruined it. I fully agree.
But excellent suggestion. I mean, you can't deny what happened to you. I mean, just the fact
that
I can't deny it
because I bought one. I can't not bring that up. That was our budget, and that's where we ended up. I mean, my wife was like, I don't like our Acadia. It's not fun enough to drive. I want something that's more fun to drive. Here's our budget. look where we ended up.
Speaking of fun to drive, it's going to hit all the buttons on the fun to drive factor. So,
certainly for that class of vehicle, unless of course you want to go X6, don't do that. But anyway,
soon BMW is going to build you a three-person SUV, three and only three, for your son that's 7 years old.
Three people, three doors. It's the BMW's new X1.5. Anyway,
it's coming. Oh man, you know it's coming. It's going to be a hybrid.
We've got a lot of great questions from Facebook. I wanted to jump in with one that made me laugh because we are guilty of this. I actually didn't tell you I was going to do this one, but I just remembered it. Our friend Michael Morris wrote to us and asked, what is the correct pronunciation of the German place called the Ring? What is the correct pronunciation of that? Because Paul and I have said it differently on the podcast. Now, I want to side note for a second. This podcast, with exception of minor notes for the car debate, is done pretty much from the hip. And we don't really even talk before. We just get on the podcast and say, go.
Right.
So
right.
As a result, we're thinking fast. We're talking fast. Of course, clearly, I talk fast all the time. We mispronounce things when we're running and gunning. I will fully acknowledge. And there are diligent ones of you that listen and go, well, they didn't pronounce that right at all. I'm going to write in. And you write in, and you were right. We have mispronounced things. We will continue to do so, I promise you.
We will continue to mispronounce and have a very loose grasp on the English language. We can promise you that.
We will clearly try not to, but I am also promising you we will continue to not be perfect, and it will happen. Having said that, yes, the actual pronunciation, I don't claim to have it right, and Tom, our German correspondent, is listening right now and holding his breath and expecting me to do it wrong. But the Nordschleife is approximately the German way to say the Nordschleife. Now, Paul pronounces it in the pilgrimage film Nordschleife, which is the standard American mispronunciation of that word. So he's not off in the woods. There are many people that pronounce it that way, but the Nordschleife is close to correct, as is Touristenfahrten, which is very hard to say, but I have tried very hard to do that, and that essentially means your public track session times there at the Nordschleife. So, that is close, Michael. Somewhere, Tom is wishing he could reach through his iPod and correct me. But
you know
that's
you know
vaguely
it.
Right. And if we didn't get that wrong this time, wait, because on the next podcast, I may say it wrong. So there you go.
I'm happy to be wrong, actually. So Nordschleife, three syllables. And Tom is about to correct me as well. But
absolutely.
All right. Well, we're getting there. We're working towards it. At some point in the future, it'll be perfect.
Yep.
Promise. But in the meantime,
when I am old enough to have dementia, I won't mispronounce anymore. I just won't make any sense. That's what will happen.
You just won't remember what you're talking about. But you pronounce.
No
it
idea what Todd's saying, but at least it's all pronounced really well. And he finally slowed down in his old age, and we can catch every word. That'll probably be how it happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right. Well, I have to say one of my favorite questions from this session, this round of Facebook questions, was at the very bottom. If you scroll down, Jason Cornell asks, what's your favorite Ferrari? And Jason, the answer is very simple. My favorite Ferrari is any Ferrari that somebody else owns.
That you can drive.
That I get to drive and
that's a
they
good point.
Own.
Yeah.
I would love to own a Ferrari. Honestly, I would love to. I aspire to Ferrari ownership. I mean, what car guy doesn't?
Yeah, I hear you.
It's the mythical. It's Ferrari, but then I think, well, would I drive it or would it become a garage queen? Just like just about every other Ferrari you see, they come out in the summer. The guy's wife doesn't get to drive it, and it's spit polished and it's never driven. Have you ever seen a Ferrari caked with mud, driven, I mean, besides a press car, besides Harris doing his Harris thing to Ferraris? Have you ever seen it? I think, all right, well, you do that to a Ferrari and you're going to be in for a large maintenance bill. It's like a helicopter. It's somewhere in the range of 1 hour of maintenance for every 4 hours of flight time, something like that, and it's not cheap. Same thing applied to a Ferrari. You. And the early Ferraris, even if they're, you know, the 90s ones on down, you drop the engine. 15,000, 30,000 mile services are, I don't even know what they cost, but they're more than 10 grand.
Like, well, you could buy a car for what the service cost you. That's pretty common, and especially like you say, before the 90s Ferraris, when you were dropping the engine on your mid-engine Ferrari to do anything, you could buy another car for the same price as your service, which is nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts. And also let me acknowledge, you could buy another nice car. I acknowledge you could spend $400 on your car tomorrow and go buy a car for $400. I'm talking you could buy a legitimate car that we've recommended on the car debate for what you got your Ferrari serviced for.
Honda S2000. Hello. You could legitimately buy one for the service.
Oh, regularly.
So you got to be a rich person, and that's fine. If you can, if you got the scratch, bring it. I admit I aspire to Ferrari ownership. It would probably lean more towards the newer ones, just in terms of more reliability and build quality and all that stuff. But I love just about every Ferrari. I mean, how can you not? It's hard to assail the Ferrari mountain and point out, well, that's an ugly one, and I wouldn't want that if somebody tried to foist it upon me and gave it to me. Gee, yeah. No, I don't want a Ferrari, but at this point in my life, yeah, want to drive them, but I want somebody else to own it and pay for the maintenance bill, honestly. So,
yeah, I like the somebody else owns it and pays for it. That is the best Ferrari. I think I agree with you.
Up there with the pickup truck.
I like the, and of course, I'm influenced by being a little kid and watching TV, but, I like the original 308, the Magnum PI Ferrari that them on the map in the mind of everybody that was not already on board with Ferrari, that was just like the casual non-car people suddenly like Ferraris because of the 308 with Tom Selleck in it. But that made a big impression on me as a kid, just seeing that car.
And I'll
never forget watching that show and seeing, I think he's like 6'3", 6'4", seeing him drive around with the Targa top off all the time because his head stuck out of the roof. So, I just remember, and I remember thinking at the time, amazing that he's that tall. I'm pretty much as tall as Tom Selleck now, which is nuts. But, that made a big impression. And so as a result, I love the 288 GTO. That one just has I have a soft spot for that car. Never driven one. I have a real soft spot for that car. That's a Ferrari that every time I see one, it stops me. I just walk around it. That one just really does it for me. Then the late 80s, Ferraris. I mean, I know that's the Testarossa. I'm aware that it's in there, but I think they have aged terribly.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
And I don't personally feel like Ferrari really found styling. They're Ferraris, so you look, I will acknowledge. And I'm obviously not as savvy on styling as you are, but personally, I don't feel like Ferrari made another car that I just loved the look of until they got to 458. And that one just captures me in the same way that that old 288 GTO did, just on sheer looks. Haven't driven that one either. I will sidestep and say F40, of course, is an icon.
Sure.
Because that actually looks like nothing else they've ever styled either, because it's mostly race car design. I mean, it's pretty much just, oh, yeah, race car, make it look like a race car. Okay, let's sell that. That's a different animal. I'm talking about their genuine street-looking cars. They missed 15, almost 20 years for me, where I liked them because they were Ferraris, but I didn't feel like the purity of design was there for me to be like, I don't care what the brand is. I don't care what the logo is. That's a sexy car. 458 did it. And right now I like the look of almost everything in their lineup. I wish we could say we've driven a lot of them. We haven't. But if you're listening and you have Ferraris, you can reach us at everydaydriver.com and we will come drive your car. Your Ferrari and your gas and tires and maintenance are our favorite Ferrari. So there you go.
That's true. Well, I've heard you say you like the 355 and you like elements of the 360 Modena in there. There's some softness and smoothness about those cars that are really appealing.
The 348 did nothing for me. Just sheer styling.
Yeah.
And so I felt like a 355 redeemed it styling-wise. I never liked the Spider. I do like the Coupe. I actually think the Coupe, I don't feel like it was as sexy as I think it is now. I feel like that styling has gotten better. I feel like when it dropped, it was like, oh, okay, it's better than the 348, but it's not awesome. But I look at them now, and I'm like, no, the 355 is kind of timeless. I think the Testarossa aged terribly because of those 80s Miami Vice side strakes and other things. As much presence as that car has, I think it's aged badly. However, there's one that we have seen modified of all things in the Park City area that we've talked about doing a fast blast for. I still think we should do that.
Agreed. Real quick, speaking of Miami Vice, I will go way back, Jason, and actually answer your question. It's the first Miami Vice car, not the Testarossa, but the one before that. 1973 375 GTB. That's up there with my favorite Ferraris. And those things now regularly get auctioned between $800,000 and $1 million US dollars, which is staggering. But I love that wedge, just a clean, simple shape, bright colors work well. I usually see it in red or yellow. And yeah. As you were talking, just things that have aged well. That's my favorite Ferrari. So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are two questions here that I want to tie together, and I want to tie them together because they have the same, the answer is provided in the same place. Okay. They're not going to seem connected, but I want to mention the questions first, and then I want to connect the dots. First question is from Eric Hickey, and this makes me laugh. He says, I've never heard you guys use foul language in any of your podcasts or videos. Do you make up for it when the mics are off? Will there someday be a bloopers reel just littered with F-bombs? Aaron, I laughed when I read that question. So there's that question. And Kyle Martin also asked, have you guys driven the Renault Megane RS265 or any Renault model? What is your opinion? I link those questions not because I've had a cussing spree about the Renault. I'm not linking it for that reason. I'm linking it because the answer to both is in the same place, and that's our pilgrimage film. Let me actually answer your question. Kyle, we drove the Renault Megane RS265 around the ring. That was our introduction to the ring car. And if you've been paying attention to the Nordschleife within the Megane. Anyway, so that was our introduction car. Because RSR, our friends there, that's one of the cars they recommend. And it is superb. Genuinely one of the best hot hatches sold.
Yeah. Yep.
We only did track time in it. I can't speak to what does it feel like on the road comparative to an RS. I mean, compared to like a Focus ST or a Mazda Speed 3. We didn't have that ability. We only drove this thing on the track. But it was, I think it shocked both of us. And you can see that in the pilgrimage film. Plus, we drive it hard and we do more than just drive around the track discussion-wise. We actually talk about the car some, too. That's in pilgrimage. And then, do we cuss? Yes, we do, but we try very hard to make a family-friendly program. Knowing that people were going to be paying for pilgrimage and probably not watching it with their kids and that kind of thing, we let loose, and that one gets a little more nuts. It does happen, but we try really, really hard on podcasts and videos to whoever is around you could hear this, and it's not a problem. We know some of you actually have listened to the podcast while commuting with your kids. We want to be very careful there. But there's stuff that flies around in the pilgrimage film.
It happens. But yes, as you said, we are very adamant about making a good show and making it clean for everybody. So that's important to us as well. So anyway, thank you for noticing. Really appreciate it. We try hard.
And sometimes you'll hear me going on a rant, and there'll be, maybe I'm the only one that hears it, but I hear it back on the podcast later. I'm going on a rant, and somewhere in the middle of my rant, there's like this stutter step, half second beat longer than the cadence of the rest of my words. And it's my brain going, no. Don't say that. Say this.
Don't say it happens. That.
It happens anytime I rant. It happens.
So go back and listen to those older podcasts and listen between the lines and you'll get it.
Wait for the word that Todd decided to say, not the word Todd wanted to say. Yes, right. Exactly.
Right. All right. So AJ Gall is asking, is a Toyota Venza electrified Subaru Forester? He's asking because he owns one of each. And that made me laugh, along with somebody else. And I'm trying to find their tweet. I think they asked if they lexified their toddler, would that be child abuse? And I say no, yes, as long as awesome. The dial is set to cashmere or teddy bear. And then you pointed the t-shirt cannon lexifier at your toddler. Then you'll be fine.
That was my dividing line, is I felt like you can lexify your toddler. This is a fun sentence, isn't it? However, you
never
shouldn't,
been said before, ever, in
you
the
shouldn't,
history of ever.
You shouldn't do it with the Lexus with the Lexus canon. I think the canon may be the child abuse element. So if there's another way to apply the lexification, there, I've gone even further. If there's another way to apply the lexification to your toddler without canon form, because that may be a bridge too far, then yes, you can lexify your toddler. That was a weird paragraph. That was a very
weird
paragraph.
Maybe it's like baby oil, or maybe you could brush it on.
No, stop. We need to eject. That's
where's this? Dear God, this parachute is a knapsack.
can you answer the Stallone question that was posted?
Oh, yeah. Where is that? Scrolling. Keith Roxo said, "Paul, Demolition Man, go."
It's a Stallone movie that begins with D, and if you followed along, the pattern with Paul seems to be Stallone movies that begin with D, he does not like them.
Well, look, the suckitude was high on this film too, Keith, but there were cars in it, and specifically GM's sort of concept cars from the film. And so cars, that sort of added an element that I wasn't expecting. If there hadn't been these cool futuristic – well, no. But if the futuristic cars weren't in there, I would say add it to the list. So I'll go 75%. 75% in the suckitude category just because of the cool cars, sort of like, well, there's cars and they do interesting things at the future and blah. But
Wesley Snipes, Stallone, Sandra Bullock, there were some funny moments in it, like the three shells and the other stuff. Everything was owned by Burger King. I mean, there were some funny moments in it. But you know what that makes me remember? And this is random, but go with me. In the 90s, there was this fascinating trend in film. And one of the films that started it was the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie, Prince of Thieves, that had it won every award and was top 40 forever. Song by Bryan Adams was the theme at the end. And after that was such a big hit, there was then this trend throughout the 90s, and Demolition Man was wrapped up in it, where they hired some huge pop star to do the closing credit song. And that closing credit song became a phenomenon in and of itself. And Sting, of all people, did the song Demolition Man for the movie Demolition Man.
Oh, that's right.
And it was not a big hit, but it was in that era where every big summer movie, they were hiring some pop star to do the thematic in tune, and it was just a thing. I know they still try to do it now, but it's not nearly as successful as it was then, and it was something they almost discovered then. And, I mean, Bond's done it forever in opening credits, but the Bond opening credits are almost their own little movie. This was just, hey, we're going to play you, you know, the credits scrolling over black, but you're going to stay because this is pop song's new release that relates to the film. Gag. Anyway, so yeah.
And I like Sting. That's the problem. So it can't totally suck. It just mostly sucks.
But it's not exactly the song you think of in Sting's body of work. It's like, you know what's great? No. Moving on.
So what you do is you go through his pockets and look for loose change. Anybody? Bueller? Nobody?
Why are you doing – why Princess Bride? Why?
Because I just had to end on something funny and good anyway.
Something better?
I kind of screwed it up there too, didn't I? Oh, well.
Yeah, it's all good. So Andrew Morrill wrote to us as well, and he actually wrote us seeing the call for questions on Facebook. He then wrote us a Facebook message because he had a long question. I'm going to try to condense it. But Andrew, I liked your question because I felt like there was an answer you were missing. It's kind of a mini car debate. He's leaving his Golf TDI, and he wants to buy a pickup. Now, I can't explain to you, kind listener, why on earth Andrew is going from a Golf TDI to a pickup, but he has his mind fully set on a pickup.
Clearly.
And while he could get really good pricing on a Chevy, he doesn't want a Chevy either. He specifically has landed on the Ford F-150. Now we enter into problem areas because he specifically describes himself as having money burning a hole in his pocket. So clearly, if we didn't cover this tonight, I fear that Andrew might buy something online overnight. So we're desperately trying to stay ahead of you, Andrew.
Why do I have
multiple
sets of knives shipped to my house? Where did these come from?
What's going on?
I didn't need a ShamWow. I already have 15. Man.
All bad. So that's the thing. He's going to buy immediately, and please help me now. And then he doesn't like Ford introducing a new 10-speed transmission, which they're about to do to all of their lineup, and he would really like a Raptor. So he's going, how do you help me? I don't want the 10-speed. I don't need a Raptor. Hey, you're right there with me, Andrew. You like the Raptor, and you have no reason for it. You're coming from a Golf TDI. Nothing in your life describes you even needing a pickup, let alone a Raptor. Here's the thing I think you're missing, though. You don't want the 10-speed. You haven't had a pickup before. You like the Raptor, but you don't know that you'll have much use for it. I'm going to stop you for just a second. Take a deep breath. What's a new Raptor? It's touching 60 grand. I mean, you're talking about if you don't get a Raptor, you're going to get the fully loaded F-150. That's still 50 grand.
Right.
So you're talking about spending 50 grand on a pickup. You don't need a pickup. You don't even know if you're going to like it. I'm going to say this to you. We often say buy a car because you love it, even if it doesn't make sense. If you really want a pickup, buy a used Raptor. Spend yourself 30, 35 grand instead of 50 to 60 grand. Buy a used Raptor, because that way you can buy it just for the laughs. Am I going to like this? Poor analogy, but it's the pretty girl you're not sure if you can get along with her. That's what we're talking about. It's just a thing you want. You want that Raptor. It makes no sense at all. Okay, great. So go buy yourself a used Raptor. Most of the depreciation has happened. You avoid the 10-speed transmission you don't want, and you may have it 6 months or a year and just go, what was I thinking?
Sure, sure.
But how much is that car going to depreciate in that year? If you buy one for $35,000 with 50,000 miles on it, it's not going to drop that far. So I think the safer call is, okay, you're so curious, you're so desperate for an F-150, buy yourself the Raptor that you want, buy it used, avoid the transmission, see what you think, and maybe you can get out.
I was just going to say, go with it, go for the Raptor, but I like the used Raptor. I mean, nobody needs this truck. You can pull a trailer at high speed and win the Baja 1000 in comfort, yes, listening to your favorite music.
You
with
can pull your trailer at high speed on the Baja 1000, which would actually make for a hysterical, yes, video. Pull one of those really lightweight caravans that barely stays on the road anyway. Pull totally. That on the Baja 1000 and see what's left on the trailer ball when you're done.
Totally.
Just, you know, how much of it have you picked up bystanders? Are you now hauling along like large pieces of shrubbery? What's there? That would be a fascinating video, I have to say.
Oh my gosh, I like that idea because, again, nobody really needs one of these trucks unless you're, yeah, taking it out in the desert and doing high speed stuff with that. But I mean, there are some changes to the new one, but I just don't know if they're enough to justify the price difference and the fact that it's going to depreciate, and then you've put out a whole lot of money, and yeah,
and he's a guy that is not a truck guy fascinated by a truck. Awesome, but there's a level of risk involved there, and I'm trying to temper that a bit. And I'm just thinking, okay, Andrew, I get it. There is that you can't explain love thing. You want to take the plunge. Cool. Used Raptor. Save yourself a little bit of that money burning a hole in your pocket and see what you think.
It's going to be either that or a couple of 53-foot trailers full of cases of ShamWows and other...
Put the computer down and back away.
Late-night detritus littering all our bad televisions anyway.
All bad. Yep.
Holy moly. We are just jumped past an hour, so thank you, guys. This is a lot of fun. The Facebook questions are making us laugh like crazy.
Which is great.
Very
thank
creative
you guys
stuff. This is mm-hmm. still laughing. They're still coming in here. This is great. Thank you. Please check out the everydaydriver.com adventures. We talked about it at the beginning, but I will mention it again as we are
definitely
doing until we go, because we want you on that trip with us. We would really love you to consider it. And again, consider it in terms of track time. It's going to be quite a bargain in terms of that as well. So
absolutely, yeah. It's an all inclusive trip. It's not cheap, but it's an all inclusive trip, which is pretty cool.
Yes, and what else? Chicago Track Day, and keep writing to us with your own car debate on the website or everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
And stand by for questions to Dan Roth.
Dan Roth,
he's going to join us, so we will be posting for those questions, and that will happen rapidly the same day you're hearing this podcast, if you're listening on Tuesday, that we are recording that night. So definitely think of your questions you want to ask Dan, and we'll be doing car debates with him. And also keep those recommendations for other guests coming. We're curious and listening. Many big videos on the way, some of which we can't discuss, but among those is the beginning of the long-term discussions of Paul's Cayman GTS. I'm actually very excited to share that. That is a fun car to shoot and drive, and we've gotten some cool stuff. And we've got more coming from Tom Hilmanzik, our European correspondent. He's getting in some cars we've never even been close to, and he's driving them hard and talking about those. There's some great stuff coming up from him as well. And also, I keep saying it, but it's going to happen, Pink Jag.
Also sentences that don't get to be used very often in life. Pink Jag. I love it.
There should that be an Everyday Driver t-shirt? I just thought of that. It's actually a black shirt with an incredibly simple font like a Helvetica. It's a very just a black shirt, lowercase. It just says Pink Jag on it. Nothing else. That's it. Just says Pink Jag in pink letters, by the way.
In pink
and then
letters.
You have the Everyday Driver logo. You have the Everyday Driver logo and URL on the back. And people are going to be like, what is that shirt? It just says Pink Jag. That's it. On the front.
All right.
Done.
Well, there you go. So you've been left with something to vote for. Let us know what you think. Pink Jag. Thanks, everybody.